Hey, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the No Way Podcast. This week's special guest is Larisa Tronco. Larisa is best known for her work on Netflix's The Order and Nickelodeon's hit show Make It Pop. Be sure to keep an eye out for her upcoming role in the indie movie Drinkwater, where she stars alongside Eric McCormick. Like always, you can watch this episode's No Way scenes on our Instagram page at No Way Podcast. And I just wanted to apologize to our listeners on this episode. My audio cut out about halfway through, so you're going to notice I switch over to Zoom audio and start sounding like a robot, so sorry about that. But let's get to this episode. I'm very excited to have Larisa on. Let's go to the movies. Hi, Larisa. Welcome to the No Way Podcast.
Do you guys have a jingle?
We do, but by this point in the episode, it would have already played.
That sounded like you had one ready.
What would be your jingle for this?
No way.
Oh, okay. That's just like the one I pitched.
Yeah. But much better performed performance. Well.
I'm super excited to have you today, Larisa, because you're a hometown bud. And I have a special place in my heart and pride for people from Winnipeg and from the prairies. And we're actually all from the prairies here today. Mike's from Regina and Kayvon's from Saskatoon and us from Winnipeg. So we've got a prairie affair going on tonight, which is super exciting. Larisa, we know each other. We go far back and we first met at a film studio where we took classes together as actors. We're the same age. So we would have been, what, 15, 16, somewhere there?
You know, it's funny, Markian. You think that is where we met, but that is not where
earlier?
We met.
Please tell.
I mean, if you can remember a small storyline about a porcupine and an armadillo.
We were in that same class.
Yeah.
Markian has a hard time with storylines of any length, so I'm sure this is going to be hard for him.
Markian, we had a whole love story.
We did.
Oh my gosh.
Are you actually related? What's going on? What's the reveal here?
Yeah.
Actually, my brother.
Larisa, you just blew my mind.
You are so right. And for some reason, I think just like the film studio stands out to me a lot. And as an experience that I don't know how much we want to talk about it. To me, it's the closest thing that I think I've ever been to being in a cult.
No, hang on. Before you talk about how you were in a sex cult at age 12, can you? What was the story there? Were you in kindergarten together? I didn't gather what
the
actual.
Yes, Larisa, please finish the story.
So we went to theater classes, right? We at Manitoba Theater for Young People. And we were put in a prestigious young group, I would say, because we had to audition for it. And we were casted in this really sort of depressing, children's play. I forgot what it's about, but someone like dies at the end. And I remember like reading it, and both me and Markian were like, it's kind of depressing.
I think there was something to do with the environment.
I was like, is it the Schindler's List, the play? Like, what did you do?
For children. Yeah, basically. But we were, Markian was a porcupine and I was an armadillo.
You've just brought so much memories back to me right now.
Trauma or memories?
Yeah, it feels suppressed, and you don't usually suppress good memories, Markian.
And I also now understand why he's always been terrified of porcupines.
I know, hey?
Hey, I'm just a little embarrassed because I'm like, I'm going to introduce Larisa here, and I know where we met, I know our history, and then she comes on, and she's like, no, actually, you're wrong. We met way earlier in our lives, which is so true.
We absolutely
She's like, Markian, this is like our third podcast we've done together.
Yeah.
Markian, we went to school together since we were in grade one. Yeah. We were in the same class for 10 years.
We were born in the same hospital.
Yeah, come on, guys.
So let's kind of jump into it here. Larisa, can you introduce what movie you have brought to us today?
Absolutely. So I chose Spy Kids. I did write a log line for it. Would you guys like to hear it?
Oh, I'd love that.
Yes, yes, we want. We never had a log line.
When a sibling duo is involuntarily obligated into finding their missing parents, they finally uncover the hidden past and discover who they truly are. Secret spies.
Wow.
I mean,
wow.
I'm in.
What's a public spy?
Oh, my parents can't be spies. They're not cool enough.
Gregorio and Ingrid Cortez are the two greatest secret agents the world has ever known. Working for separate countries, they are sent to eliminate their most dangerous enemy, each other. But when they finally come face to face, they fall in love instead and embark on the most dangerous mission they have ever faced, raising a family. Now, 9 years later, after their retirement, having exchanged the adventure of espionage for parenthood, Gregorio and Ingrid are called back into action. When their former colleagues, the world's most formidable spies, start disappearing, the Cortezes are forced to take on Fegan Floop and his evil sidekick, Minion. But when the unthinkable happens and they too are captured, there are only two people in the world who can rescue them. Their kids.
How to be a spy. Author unknown.
Spy Kids was released on March 30th, 2001. It is directed and written by Robert Rodriguez, who is also known for Sin City, From Dusk to Dawn, Machete, and of course the Spy Kids series, because there is a whole bunch of them. It stars Antonio Banderas as Gregorio Cortez, Carla Gugino as Ingrid Cortez, Alexa Panavega as Carmen Cortez, and Daryl Sabara as Junie Cortez, Alan Cumming as Floop, Tony Shalhoub as Alexander Minion, and Cheech Marin as Felix Gum. And of course, Danny Trejo as Machete.
Machete is not responsible for nobody but Machete.
Dimension is known for its horror and thriller and action movies, so Spy Kids was a bit of a sideways turn for them. Like, they are known for Sin City, the Halloween series, Scream, Hellraiser, The Mist, Grindhouse. And then they made Spy Kids, Shark Boy, and Lava Girl, and then Herbie Reloaded. So they had this quick stint of releasing kids movies amongst all these horror movies. It had a budget of $35 million, and it did $148 million. Dollars worldwide at the box office. So it was a huge success, and it stayed at number one in the US box office for 3 straight weeks.
That's cool.
It also went on to have Spy Kids 2, Spy Kids 3D, Spy Kids 4D, and its spin-off Shark Boy and Lava Girl.
What is 4D?
Yeah, what was the fourth dimension they explored in the fourth film?
Smell-o-vision?
Smell?
Oh, shit. Talking mushrooms.
Roger Ebert gave this movie 3.5 stars, and he said, Spy Kids is giddy with the joy of its invention. It's an exuberant, colorful extravaganza, wall-to-wall with wildly original sets and visual gimmicks, and smart enough to escape the kids' film category and play in the mainstream. So it was really well-received at the time, too, and kind of stood the test of time, in my opinion. And it also has a 93% on Rotten Tomatoes. So people just really, really enjoy this movie. And which brings us to Larisa. Can you explain, or do you have a memory of the first time experiencing this movie, where you saw it, how you felt after watching it?
You know, I just always remembered watching action movies because my dad was obsessed with, like, The Mummy and Indiana Jones, and Spy Kids was one of the first movies that had both, like, action but still for kids. And because it's so action-based, I think me and my brothers just, like, loved it. You know, the kids are badass. I think I really enjoyed that. And yeah, I'm pretty sure, like, I owned the DVD, and it was one of those movies that I would watch every week and not get sick of it.
Spy work? That's easy. Keeping a family together? That's difficult.
Larisa, you already gave us such a good log line for this film, so this next bit you might be repeating yourself a little bit, but it's a game we like to do at the start of this podcast where we ask our guests to pretend they are the creator of the movie, so the movie being Spy Kids, and we are Hollywood execs, and you're in an elevator pitch setting where you have to sell us on Spy Kids. And so you kind of have 20 to 30 seconds to convey the spirit and the concept of this film, so we give you the $30 million that you're looking for.
Sometimes, in order to think big, you have to think small.
Hola, ¿cómo estás? I'm not going to try to speak any more of that. That's what I'm going to start with. Hi. So there's this great movie. You know, it's if you've ever wondered as a kid, like, what your parents do, are they really a nurse? Are they really a doctor? Are they really a construction worker? And then all of a sudden you see these weird gadgets in their suitcase. They're kind of like coming home late at night. Maybe they're having an affair with somebody, but then you realize, no, they are spies.
It's such a good pitch, but it's like all these execs are like, I haven't wondered that, but like, sounds like you've had some experiences as a kid.
I've never heard a better pitch for denial. Like, you find weird things in their bags and they don't come home anymore, and but that they're spies.
So you make a movie about it. So you make a movie about it to try to explain what's happening.
Yeah, so then you find out that they're spies, and then all of a sudden they are missing. So the only way you can save them is if you become a spy yourself. And this movie unleashes that kid in you to explore, to, you know, follow in your parents' footsteps, to really find your true identity by exploring your family's past. And what does that mean to you? Carrying that forward.
Have a good day, son. Show them who's boss.
You started your pitch with speaking Spanish.
Guys, there's a whole ordeal with that. I pretended to speak Spanish at a callback to play Danny Trejo's daughter.
Machete is not responsible for nobody but Machete.
Oh, yeah.
What a direct connection.
And it didn't go well at all because they asked me to speak Spanish. Then, like, the director was like, oh, so, like, you spoke a little Spanish in the scene, like, you translated a couple of things in the scene, and he's like, you speak Spanish? And in my mind, I was just like, just say no.
Si.
Like, it's si. No, I was like, just, it's okay, like, you don't have to lie. And I fully went, yep. And he was like, oh, so, like, fluently, and I'm like, yep. And it was one of those, like, outer body experiences of, like, I can see myself lying and, like, I'm like, why are you lying? But you just keep, like, going with it. And I was like, yeah, no problem. Thank you so much. Have a good day. And he's like, oh, let's hear some.
Oh, shit. You were so close.
Oh, like, right. I'm like, oh, like, right now? Like maybe right now? Or, like, on set? Like, perhaps on set? He's like, no, let's just, like, spitball, like, right now. And I'm like, absolutely, for sure. No problem.
What was the spitballing?
Yeah, I want to know what happened.
Yeah, what was the spitballing? How did that work?
Buenos dias. Soy Larissa. Uno, dos, tres. And then he goes, so you don't speak Spanish?
Oh.
And I was like, oh, I'm sorry. I thought you meant like, I misunderstood you. Like,
you
play
like,
dumb.
Mucho pano.
You should have just been like, no comprendo.
Oh my god.
No comprendo.
Like, I'm so sorry. Like, I thought you meant like basic Spanish. He's like, no, like we said fluent. I was like, great, cool, cool, cool.
You're like, yeah, I don't know what fluent means.
Yeah. And you know what? If they asked me to do that tomorrow, like if that happened to me tomorrow, I would probably still say yes, I do speak fluent Spanish.
Our givens for Spy Kids is, this is a world of spies. So we do not question the technology that is being presented. We do not question the lack of injury that occurs to people on some pretty intense situations. We do not question the physical prowess of anybody who is a spy. We accept those as the world of spies. And under a sort of like mini category is that the world around them seems somewhat normalized to these events and actions, particularly because we noticed in a lot of background scenes, nobody really acknowledges the incredible spy things happening in the middle of parks or stores. So we're just accepting that the world seems to be like, yeah.
Spies.
Spies.
Secret spies. Secret spies. Not public spies.
Do you have any issue with our givens, mm-hmm. or one you would challenge should be included?
No, I think that pretty much covers it. I think the main thing was like the technology, you know, on it all. But yeah, I think the givens, you guys covered it. Well, I have some notes ready, so whenever y'all are ready, let's rock and roll.
I always wanted to do this.
round one.
So after watching the film, there was nothing we clocked as a collective group in about the first hour of the film. So there was nothing out of place that, you know, me, Mike, or Kayvon thought that was a no way. So we had all of our problems, all three of them, coming in the last 30 minutes of the film. And I'm going to jump to an hour 9 of the movie. And my first no way has to do with Miss Gridenko, who is the former OSS member that has turned, and she's tasked with locating the Cortez kids and finding this third brain. And so she does this, and she breaks into the Cortez's safe house. And so this is earlier in the movie.
Sending the thumbs.
And then she has to fight with the kids, where Eulariza might remember she gets her head burnt to a crisp.
Bad hair day.
And then she gets her head extinguished with a fire extinguisher. So that's the precursor to the no way that I'm about to give here.
Right, so now we're going to watch a short clip at 1 hour, 9 minutes into Spy Kids, if you are following along and are curious at what we're looking at.
Welcome back, Miss Gridenko.
It's good to be back, Alex.
Okay.
Okay, Larisa, now before I bring up my no way, can you guess what my no way is at all from the clip of Miss Gridenko?
That someone approved that look from network.
So my no way with this moment in the movie is Miss Gridenko willingly, and I guess with confidence, showed up to Floop's castle with her hair like that.
Oh, that's
and
your no
she's
way.
She's had, that is my, that's it. We're starting off really easy and simple with our first no way here. And my no way is just that she's had about, I would say about a day and a half since her incident at the safe house. And she has, and I would think, had multiple opportunities to shave her head, get a wig. She is a former spy. She's got multiple resources to present herself in a better way. She knows she's got this big meeting coming up, and she's presenting herself. I would have done something
phenomenal.
I want to jump in on Markin here. Just to be careful about this. I'm also a no way on this, but it doesn't come from a place of being like, you should clean yourself up. You're a lady, clean your act up. Like you should look better. But just that it's a rat tail hanging off the front of her head with burned scorch along the sides. It feels as a spy, it seems inconsistent. As a secret spy, it seems like it's a bit of a hazard. And you also stand out pretty strongly in a crowd with that look.
Thank you for your thoughts. from what I'm seeing from it is her hair is part of her dignity. And so what is left is what she's going to keep, because yes, it has burnt off, and yes, the kids got away, but she's still standing there. She's still standing strong. And I think her hair is part of that, you know, of her owning where she is and who she is. Yeah, and she seems like, you know, she is badass, so she wouldn't want to, admit her faults or admit that she lost. And I think part of that is in her hair, the few strands that are left. And I think that also goes hand in hand as to why it looks styled, like the little, you know, it kind of looks like a faux hawk moment, and a little bit like the longer pieces do look curled. So it does show that she is putting in effort with what she has.
I'll believe that when I see it.
I just think though, if it's a thing about dignity and keeping her hair of like what she's got left, for the listeners, Kayvon keeps bringing the screenshot up of this. Miss Gridenko, look at the on top.
Look, she put effort.
And it's curled.
She curled that one piece of hair.
But I mean, if dignity is the thing, I mean, I think there's more dignity in owning the fact that like you don't have that there or anymore. I'm just trying to like put this into my own context of if I got my hair burnt off and it looks pretty wild, and then I have to go to my boss's office, and I am supposed to be one of the best spies in the world, I'm going to present mm-hmm. myself in a manner that is dignified.
If you look closely at her, you know, her hair area, all the pieces that were burnt are no longer look burnt. Like, you can see that she chopped something at the top there.
I never thought of that.
I don't see burnt pieces.
So she put an effort.
I don't see burnt ends. Like,
this is actually her reveal party as now being a part of the supervillain group. It's a pretty great supervillain look to own the scars, to own the intense look. When we think about, if we're talking about the world of spies, the rule of spies, James Bond world, the villains always highlight their scars. They don't hide them. They like to bring them forward. Maybe she's trying to own the new villain persona.
Don't you want to see your parents, you little brat?
Where I'm now sitting with this is what you brought to light to me, Larisa, is that it, upon further inspection, she put an effort into her look right here.
Look at that. She took a curling iron.
Oh my God, that side looks like it. When she was at that side, it looks like it.
She got all the way to the back, Markian, and that's hard for us to do.
You know, I was thinking of this metaphor before in terms of, because they're presenting to that group of like investors or whatever to buy their militarized kids. And that's how she shows up. And I had this thought of, if you went to a mechanic and they came out squeaky clean looking and there wasn't any oil on them anywhere, would you trust that mechanic? Or would you trust the one who's like head to toe in grime and there's tools everywhere? And you're like, that guy's been working. And you can look at Miss Grudenko there and she's like, yeah, I'm polished. But also, I've been through some shit. Like, I know what the fuck is up.
Do you want the doctor who comes out with an intestine over his shoulder splattered in gore? Or do you want the doctor who looks like he just washed up?
yeah. If he comes out and the intestine's hanging over his shoulder and he's like, that guy's fixed. Like, that guy's alive. That guy's alive. I'm just saying,
but
I agree with the badge of honor.
You wouldn't mind a little bit of grease. You right? wouldn't mind a little bit of
She's
grease.
Wearing her battles proudly. She's going like, I want you to ask about this. This fucking crazy hairdo, I want you to ask. And when you ask, I'm going to be like, hey, you know how we have the third brain now? That's because of me. And you know what I had to do to get it? Lose 75% of my hair. I took a rocket pack to the fucking face for you guys. Look at the proof. I think shit's a badge of honor.
Let's never have children.
I'm coming down from my no way here, because also the point of it too, now that we've talked this out, is, and she does look disturbing and terrifying. And that is probably her goal at this point, because especially when you're going up against kids, if you look like that, I know I was scared of her. I'm still scared of her with that hairdo. And that's more intimidating than any other hair piece that she could have on. And maybe she looked in the mirror and was like, this is scary as shit. And I'm going to keep it because I'm going up against these kiddies.
Yeah, I think we can say where we stand now. I know where I stand.
Yeah, the owning it and letting it be a badge of pride, I'm away.
Yeah, same thing to go after Kayvon here. Like, at first, I was very much on the side of like, she's had a day and a half, shows up to her big inauguration and chooses this fucking look. But the more I thought about it, the more I thought this event isn't about aesthetic. It's about the celebration of the achievement they've done. It has nothing to do with how they look. I mean, Minion shows up with fucking triple hands on, you know, like he, you know, which we'll get to. But, you know, no one there is worried about how people look. They're there to present their achievement, and I think she's wearing her achievement on her few strands of hair left.
And I will say, Larisa, you changed my mind.
Life finds a way.
I'm just gonna say it. Secret spies.
Secret spies, guys.
Was this on your notes to defend?
It was not. I thought it was gonna go another way. Which I did have notes on, but no, the hair thing was not on my list.
What was the other thing you were thinking?
An argument on just the idea of double secret agent. Like, does that actually truly exist?
Oh, yeah.
How far will they go? I have references. I have examples.
You're like, I know spies. I can't give you their names, but I spoke to them personally to ask about spy stuff.
I want to do a whole second podcast where it's just us talking with Larisa about spies and spy history and spy stories.
Yeah.
And we can do a little.
Absolutely.
Second history based on all of your research.
I there's some pretty amazing stories out there.
Larisa, your movie is still standing.
Great.
Your Spy Kids is holding up. And now we're going to move into our next round.
Round two. So I'm going to handle this No Way here. And just to give a little context leading up to this point, something that has happened throughout the movie, which personally horrified me because I have a real problem with body horror. I have a real problem with like people's consciousnesses being trapped in like mutated bodies. Like I don't like Black Mirror episodes about that. But there's a thing that's happening. It's kind of the catalyst of the movie where all these high, top-notch secret spies are being captured by I always fuck up his name. Floop has captured multiple spies, and through this machine has transformed them into mutant monsters to use for his children's show. They're horrific. They have extra limbs, stretched out faces, all these things.
Floop is a madman. Help us. Save us.
But there's clearly a mechanism, which is this brain helmet goes on. They put that thing on. He pushes the button.
I think he's going to be a bestseller.
They mutate into this thing, and some of the rules of being these mutants are that they speak in a very high-pitched, strange voice. They speak backwards. What we have is the two parent spies have managed to capture Minion, kind of what is revealed as the big bad of this film, and they are about to put him through that machine. And this is happening at about 1 hour and 16 minutes into the movie.
I'm going to show you what happens when you cross the line and involve family.
Okay, so what we just saw is that Minion goes through the mutant transformation device, kind of loves it. He's like, fools, yeah, put me through it. Fools. In his transformation, he still seems to have, he actually gains powers. He gets super strength. It looks like he can break out of the chains. He can also still speak forward.
What happened to your head?
Oh, don't worry. I think it's reversible.
It doesn't feel like he got any of the negative effects of the mutant transformation. And based off everything I've been shown in the movie, there's no way that he would just be okay after that transformation. We've been shown that it causes crazy things to happen to people. Why is it that for him, his transformation is something that basically worked in his favor? There's no way that that would happen.
Well, I'm wondering if it's reflecting on he is the creator of this mutation device, you know, like Gregorio made a mold and created his look, and then he gave him the button, but is there something in between that they missed, that he missed, that he didn't know about in terms of like what needs to be done with the transformation? Is there something, you know, that had to be done with the voice? Because I don't remember any part of the movie showing that full process of that transformation. So maybe for him to say, you know, fools and let go because he knew that something was missing.
Mm. Yeah,
we saw it with Gregorio when he scanned the photo of or the drawing, and Gregorio got turned into Fugly. We kind of saw that process happen, and there was nothing amiss. He just scanned it, the brain thing went off, and then all of a sudden Gregorio, Antonio Banderas, couldn't speak properly.
It's dead.
So I'm coming in with a bit of an away there, Larisa. We did see a process happen there with the father, and there was nothing different that he was doing.
At 33 minutes into the film, we see Cheech Marin's character transformed into a Fugly, which is also a cute way of saying fugly for kids.
Felix.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like the process is just mold something anywhere.
Press the button.
And then press the button.
Yeah. It's just there's no evidence within the film that we're seeing.
Yeah, because I'm kind of with you.
That is a different.
When I first saw it, I was like, yeah, but he's the creator. Maybe there's a code in the button pushing. Like, there's a lot of conjecture that feels really good points or ideas. But as you, like, watching the movie, I'm like, man, there's no justification as to why this device worked differently on Minion.
Previous evidence with Cheech Marin's character, Uncle Frank, and then Minion's transition with the clay, we're seeing a consistent process, which is you see an original image of the person who's being mutated. It is adapted through the clay. You push the button, they transform, and then they start speaking in reverse and they've lost their ability to communicate. It happens consistently, except with Minion, even though the process looked identical.
Yes. See, I can't really think of an argument now that we've seen the evidence and we've gone through the three different cases in this film.
I'm just, if I can for a second, like, he says fools.
Fools.
Like, he knows something different.
Yeah.
So obviously there's something that he knows that we don't, but we're just not presented with it as an audience at all. They don't offer us anything in this film that, like, is like, oh, he changed this as he was going through the process, or he did something. Like, the filmmakers could have given us anything.
Yeah, it feels like there's a deleted scene out there of him creating a failsafe.
It's just very unrealized, because when he says fools, I was like, oh shit. He knows that if no one's there to guard him or guard one of these mutated creatures, they're essentially superpowered monsters. Because we can assume that every time someone else has been mutated, they've immediately put them in chains or put them in a cage. So he's like, oh my God, they left me alone. This is great. And then I thought, oh, and it realized itself because he smashed through the chains immediately. And then that was the end of the advantage. And then he just showed up, like, went back to work, essentially. It was the weirdest little side scene. He's, like, standing with T-1000, went off, got transmutated, came back to work, and was like, no, it's okay. I just have some extra hands now.
What happened to your head?
Okay, actually, there's a larger no way sitting in all of this. If you can, once you get mutated, you have super strength. Why aren't all of these fugglies smashing out of their chains and cages?
Yeah, it just kind of seems like there's just like confusing logic with this transformation and what being a Foogly means.
I think it, like, they just needed to get him back to the main part of the story, and they just...
And with three heads.
Yeah, I guess, you know, it's funny. Now that I'm thinking, I'm like, I had that no way, but now I'm thinking even deeper, like, why did that even happen? Why did he even get transformed?
Yeah, they had the budget. Someone had drew up a mock, and they were like, for sure, make that happen. But it's so unrealized. It doesn't line up with the tech they've established. They took one of their characters, put him through the process that they've been doing to all these super spies, mind you, not civilians. Super spies are going through this. But for some reason, Minion is super strong, can smash through the chains, doesn't lose his ability to communicate, and thinks it's and he's okay, essentially.
Yes, without...
It denies everything they've established with their previous...
Yes, without giving us context. They don't give us any context of how he's different.
Yeah. Right.
I'm 100% no way. I was so sure I was going to actually get swayed on this one somehow, but no, there's no way.
I'm staying in no way with this one.
I'm no way as well.
No way.
Oh, shiitake mushrooms.
Yeah, this is one of those no ways where it's interesting because it's like there's a lot of fun conjecture that could be had. And I think we did have it a little bit of like, I mean, when I watched it in my brain, I justified it as like, yeah, the dude is the creator of this device. Of course it works like this on him. But in hindsight, you go like, what the fuck? How come?
Yeah. And this is interesting.
This doesn't make any sense.
It's one of our first ones that we have, I think, Javon and Mike, that like has clearly broken the rules of its own world and gives us nothing to go off of like how
spy stuff,
but what? Yeah, spy stuff.
I don't believe in this anymore, Minion.
Round three.
All right, so we're 1-1. This is going to decide the future of Spy Kids for all time.
Spy Kids has swayed us a little bit and it's lost us a little bit.
My third no way is about Floop.
It's a and some mean, nasty people.
What is this Floop? This Floop is a a public figure. They have a children's television show. They have a toy line. They have a cereal brand. They live in the castle where they are a accelerated genius of machines and invention, and are working with shady organizations on certain contracts and agreements. So a really bizarre character with their hands in a lot of different pies. My dream. So really interesting character, but this character goes through a existential crisis during the last few minutes of this movie when Minion usurps his role and decides to take over the business and get him out of the way.
I assure you, it's Mr. Minion now.
Floop ends up helping the Cortez family to defeat Minion and turn the events around. Here is our clip if you're interested in watching with us. It comes around very near the end, about 1 minute 23 seconds in-ish.
Good morning, my children. Today, I'd like to introduce you to two new characters on our show, Carmenita and Junito.
Okay, so what we just watched is sort of the denouement of the film, where the Cortez family is gathered around the table. Machete is reunited with his brother. Everyone looks very happy. They're having a breakfast. We also see that Floop's television show, we can assume, he's achieved his goal of getting the number one kids show. He's using two of the robot kids, who are representations of Junie and Carmen. Junie and Carmen are now on the show, and Minion is a new
prisoner. You can say it.
Captured prisoner mutant on the show. My no way is that there are zero repercussions or consequences to Floop after everything that he was involved with, set in motion, and built.
The cunning and intelligence of the world's greatest espionage agents, all rolled into tiny packages I call Spike Him.
He's guilty of so much horrible things. Just because he felt bad at the last minute, he gets to just go on with his dreams of his TV show?
Let's say he did go to court or whatever have you, and I'm just making up stories.
Oh, no, but I kind of want to see that court case a little bit.
You know, maybe, perhaps he did go to court, perhaps he did get in a little trouble, but, you know, I feel like because he did help out the Cortez family, they would have stood up for him. They would have spoken on his behalf as well in court. That it wasn't true to his character. It wasn't really who he was. It was because he was tied up in this contract, or he was, you know, perhaps brainwashed into this cult. So therefore, it wasn't his fault, and it wasn't even his cult that he led necessarily, right? It was
Minion? Do you mean Minion?
Minion. Mr. Yeah. Minion. Yeah, Mr. Minion. You can argue that he actually saved them. Nobody died.
I just think that we're seeing a character who doesn't show a lot of remorse, fully knowledgeable that these are secret agents who've been kidnapped and transformed and have turned their brains to mush.
I have found little use for them except as novelties on my, well, my children's show.
And that he knows that he says, we hired you to build an army. And he said, yeah, I'm working on it. And so that same guy at the end was like, I just wish I could just make my TV show. And then they let him.
It's interesting how you try to argue that he doesn't seem to have any remorse. I'm actually reading it as that he doesn't want to be there. Mm. He's distant. And even when he's talking, about, you know, the secret agents turning into these things or whatever have you, he's talking about them in an exciting way. Like, I'm sure if he wanted to, he could turn them into deathly weapons. But it seems like it's like his secret as his character that he actually doesn't want to do it, and he's actually stalling the process.
Yeah.
But does doubt and hesitation excuse full awareness and participation?
And repercussions, you know.
That's the big one to me, is the repercussions. It's that he does all these things, which he does. We see him do it. there's even a piece. The clip I thought you were going to play, Kayvon, was where he finishes the song and he physically hits one of the spies in frustration, which also shows physical abuse towards these guys.
And a lack of empathy, yeah.
And a lack of empathy that they are mush and don't have control over their own bodies anymore.
Lock him up!
And to me, it's also the repercussions of if he did all these things, which he did, we saw him do it, is how did the OSS or anybody, government agency, let him slide? And to me, the tough thing is, like, he had a change of heart. He actually helped us reverse this at the end of the day. It's like, well, he still created all of it and spearheaded the entire operation until he decided to change his mind. Yes, he changed his mind. But in today's court of law, if this were a trial, would come forward, would that person be exonerated from those things because they helped switch the course or change the tide of how this whole thing went down? And that's a legit question.
Yeah, my that's really helpful to clarify, because I mean, I think it's good that we sort of delved into the minutia of Floop's character, but the no way is that the world permitted that character, regardless of how that character feels or their, you know, their internal crisis or their morality shift. It's that the world permitted that arms dealer, inventor, eccentric to remain as a children's entertainer.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that they're like, you're still a role model to kids. Yes, you built WMDs, but you're still the number one role model to our kids.
And he's like, can I keep Minion in a tank?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yep. You should definitely.
And, and on television, knowing that that is a man trapped in his body.
Well, I'm just wondering too, in terms of, because of who he is and because he is this great inventor, I wonder if they actually thought of him as an asset to their team rather than putting him away. Like, what if they use these kids? Like, obviously you see at the end of the movie that they use these kids for good, that they help with the firefighters and probably with police officers. And maybe there was a trade-off in terms of, because he is the only one who knows how to control them, right? Like, you see at the end of the movie that he was the only one who was able to switch what was right and wrong for them. And so maybe perhaps there was a deal because, you know, the Army's known to always want to have the best weapons and equipment, and these kids are now seen as weapons. And perhaps they're using them to their advantage instead of putting him away and then not knowing how to control them.
It's not an original concept that criminals turn over to state's evidence and, like, you know, testify against any number of members of cartels and mafias and warlords and, you know, whatever, to gain their own freedom and whatever. And that if someone has a special set of skills, that they, most of our governments will look past moral issues and bring them into the fold. The real core of it for me is that I see how he could turn his skill set and his knowledge over as a way to not have to be a criminal and do time. I have an issue with that he is allowed to be on children's television and that he is allowed to use the Cortez kids as cast.
Yeah, sorry,
and that he's
right.
Allowed to keep Minion as a prisoner.
We got to get back to the core of the fact that he gets to run a kids show.
He gets to run a public kids show.
If you knew Floop's history of crimes, I don't know if I could watch his show or let my kids watch his show.
Yeah, but the world doesn't know about his crimes.
Well, and that's a great point. And that's a great point. It's the world. The public does not know.
No, the public, they're secret spies, guys. It's a secret case. So yeah. This would all be under the rug. Of course, the government wouldn't want the public to know that their own inside people turned against them. You know, everything needs to be swept under the rug with these kinds of things.
I think there's a lot to be said for what Larisa's saying here, where it's like a little bit of a What's this? What's a quid pro quo again? I think that's the word I'm looking for, but it might not be the word I'm looking for.
Yeah, you do but it's basically like, I'll do something for you.
Exactly. Like, you know that the OSS had some major issues. We also have a ton of evidence that you caused a lot of potential international crimes. However, you don't tell anybody. We let you keep having your show. You know, I mean, this doesn't exist in the movie.
We get the super kids.
But the thing is, this does exist.
You get to keep the two.
Totally. Like, this doesn't exist in the movie, but this does exist in the real world. And I know in past episodes, we've justified films' realities based off real-world examples. So, like, I kind of am feeling what Larisa's saying, where it's like, yeah, it's fucked up what Floop did and accomplished, and that he gets to keep doing his show. But how many examples of that already exist in the real world? Like, look, I just finished the John McAfee documentary not that long ago. And I don't know if you guys are familiar with his story, but he's like the guy who revolutionized antiviral software and then proceeded to go to like Bolivia, murder someone, like have a harem, a gang. Like, he caused so many crimes internationally. And then he ran for president. I mean, sound familiar? But then he ran for president in the States. And so many other things. And John McAfee is still allowed to do whatever he wants right now because of his status and his wealth. And I imagine that Floop is kind of the same.
Well, and that's sort of like the controversy of what's happening with, you know, Facebook and Mark Zuckerberg, right? Like, of how much power he has.
Totally.
And how he, like, I'm sure he's aware of how much power he has, but what he's been allowing to happen on his platform, that they're arguing is a crime.
Yeah. I guess I'm wondering, like, there's a chance that the OSS just never let this get to the government, to any sort of a court, you know? They were like, we're handling this on our own, secret spy incognito, we're doing this under the covers.
Yeah, but why would the OSS want him on television with the information and knowledge he has and the volatility he's demonstrated?
I have, I think, here the core of what we're talking about. That Floop made a deal. It was a quid pro quo because we know he wants to keep his kids' show and that's his whole goal out of everything. He made a deal. This is where this is a way. He made a deal with the OSS that he gets to keep his kids' show in return for his technology and the robot children. So that's the deal they struck. That's how he keeps his show. That's how the kids are now being used for good. Now, the No Way is landing at that the OSS, in good conscience, lets this guy keep this television show running, knowing what he has done. So I think each of us now have to decide, would the OSS in this world strike that deal?
From now on, whatever we do together.
I think that Spy Kids is a movie about the truths hidden right in front of you. Good truths and bad truths. And I think Spy Kids also reveals the horrible truth that sometimes, if you're powerful and rich enough, you get away with whatever the fuck you want. And people will still love you for it. You can get away with shit. You can get away with shit if you're powerful enough. It's a way.
I'm going to say it's a way because, to me, just in terms of what the film for me is about, family. And Floop has now become part of their family. And I think that's sort of what the reason why they, you know, he has Junie and Carmen as his, you know, as his robot kids on television. It's sort of their mark and saying, you are a part of our family from afar. You don't have to be in the house with us. We don't want you in the house
with
us.
Such a creepy way to say you're part of the family.
And, you know, I'm going to say that his punishment is being in isolation out on his own out there, doing his television show by himself with these robots. And people can change. That's what I'm going to say. And I think that's what the film is currently, in my mind, about.
This film covers a lot of beautiful, deep subjects.
You watch my show.
More than you know.
I am so, this is probably to date the one I'm most torn up about in terms of No Way. I don't
probably say that every episode.
No, I haven't.
It's unprecedented. Unprecedented.
This is an absolutely unprecedented situation where I am right on the fence. And Larisa, you might have just brought it home for me because you just said that the message of this movie is people can change. We see that in Junie. We see that in Carmen.
We see that in physical transformations.
We see that in a lot of things, and there's a lot of themes here that people can change. And I think the message that Floop, even though he was doing bad things, there is a hope for those kinds of people to change. I think because the Cortezes are so good, because the OSS is in this world a organization for good in the world, that they give Floop a chance to be good. And it is now a way for me.
Life finds a way.
There it is. That's a 2 out of 3. So that is a way on Spy Kids.
Woo! Spy Kids.
Spy Kids exists.
Spy Kids stands.
That is brilliant, Minion.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for bringing. Introducing me to the world of Spy Kids.
Of course. Thank you for.
Muchos gracias. You're fluent, right?
You're fluent.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. No, thank you for inviting me. And it was so much fun to watch and just remember. Like, I'm sure you guys feel this way about most of the films that you've been watching, of just like the perspective of being an adult and watching these, and you're like, this is messed up. This is really, like, this is messed up.
I watched this when I was formative.
Before we sign off here, we do one more thing. We do the funometer here on the No Way podcast. So upon watching the movie again as an adult, out of a score of 100, how much did you enjoy this movie on a rewatch? I enjoyed this probably a good 85%.
It's tricky for me. I did really enjoy it, but I have to give it a maybe like a 65 or a 70. And it's only because, as I mentioned earlier, like, I fucking hate body horror. And seeing those highly intelligent spies trapped in bodies that can't move or speak properly fucking disgusted me. So a 70.
I'm gonna give a 65. The movie really disturbed me in a lot of places and / confused me. But I feel like if I had gone in with a different intention, if I were to watch Spy Kids high and on an adult journey with Spy Kids, I think I might even give it a 90. Yeah. But going in sober, watching what I think is a kids movie, I was like, I'm not having fun. What the fuck is happening? So I'm 65 sober as a kid. I'm 90 high as an adult.
I'm going to say a 75.
Nice.
And, you know, piggybacking off of it's fucked. Like, it's just so weird. Like, who thinks of these things? Well, we know who thinks of these things, but it's so bizarre. But the reason why I still enjoyed it was specifically because of the comedy. It actually made me laugh out loud. Like, the physical comedy, these kids were stars.
Larisa, thank you so much for joining us. This was so much fun. Thank you for giving us your time and your evening to talk about Spy Kids and watch it and everything. This was a complete joy. Thank you for defending this movie. Thanks for talking to us about it. It was awesome. Thanks so much.
Thanks for having me, guys. I really had a lot of fun.
Gracias.
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 Thank you for listening to this episode of the No Way podcast. No Way is produced by Markian Tarasiuk, Kayvon Koshkam, and Mike Gill with the help of Speakeasy Theater and the Cinematics Creation Company. The show is edited by Kayvon Koshkam and mastered by Malcolm Dow with original music by Ben Elliott. The No Way podcast is produced on the unceded lands of the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh people. Please join us next Friday for another exciting episode of No Way, and make sure to follow us on Instagram and Facebook at No Way Podcast and Twitter at No Way Pod. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll catch you next time at the movies.